Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, September 19th, 2021. I'm narrating on Thursday, September 23rd. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for September 2021. Tom Green County, as of September 23rd, City of San Angelo. 23,945 positive cases reported. 51 new positive tests. Deaths, 410. 266 from Tom Green County and 144 from other counties. 67 currently hospitalized. 1,350 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker by Diane Pataleo. Tom Green County has administered more than 98,851 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of September 21st, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 2.28% from the previous week's tally of 96,650 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 40% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of September 21st. Library display aims to raise awareness about the history of banned books by Colin Murphy, published September 22nd. With titles like Charlotte's Web, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Green Eggs and Ham, and A Wrinkle in Time, it might surprise some patrons of the Stevens Central Library to know these beloved, award-winning, and revered children's books were once banned. And that's the point of a new display in the children's section of the library, to raise awareness and start a dialogue about why certain works of fiction were once deemed unfit for young audiences. The brainchild of new children's librarian Rob Honegger and librarian Sally Myers, it is hoped the display will elevate the conversation about censorship. The theme is that censorship divides us and books unite us, Honegger said. Books create an inclusivity and encourage people to read about different things and experience the world from different perspectives. It's important that when we talk about censorship, we ask, are we creating a dialogue where everyone's viewpoint can be respected? We want to create a dialogue because everyone has a different perspective, and it's important to listen and experience different viewpoints, cultures, thoughts, and beliefs. Some of the reasons why certain children's books were banned may seem strange, given the predominant place they now hold on traditional reading lists for young people. Charlotte's Web was banned as recently as 2006 because the animal characters in the novel spoke. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland was banned in China and other parts of the world for similar reasons. A Wrinkle in Time was banned on various religious grounds. And Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham was banned in China for its supposed portrayal of Marxism. Honegger said despite the reasons put forth by those wishing to ban books, the point of the display is to try and elevate the dialogue surrounding why certain works of fiction have been seen as unsuitable for children and what lessons can be learned from the efforts to censor books. There's definitely a distinction between challenged and banned, Honegger said. We all know the story of The Lorax by Dr. Seuss, which talked about trees being cut down and deforestation. The reason that book was challenged and why people tried to get it removed from the system was because some people thought it was anti-logging and anti-forestry. Dads didn't like Hop on Pop, another one by Dr. Seuss, because kids were hopping on dad's belly at home. We can create a dialogue, even if it's uncomfortable. San Angelo Elementary School locked down during stolen handgun and narcotics arrest by John Tufts, published September 22nd. A San Angelo Elementary School was locked down as a precautionary measure after what began as a home eviction led to the arrest of a man authorities charged with theft of a firearm and possession of narcotics. At about 9 a.m. Wednesday, September 22nd, officers from precincts 1 through 4 of the Tom Green County Constable Office executed a writ of possession after eviction at a residence in the 1800 block of Walnut Street, according to a news release. Constables found two people inside the home, as well as a handgun and an item containing suspected narcotics, the release stated. Officers learned the handgun was reported stolen by the San Angelo Police Department, and the item was confirmed to contain methamphetamine. Investigators with the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office arrived and took control of the criminal investigation. Across the street from the residence, officials with Stephen F. Austin Elementary School were notified of the investigation and put the school into lockdown until the scene was secured, according to the release. The Tom Green County Constables appreciate the assistance and support from the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office, the release stated. Constables later arrested one person after concluding their investigation. While the release did not identify the person arrested, the Standard Times confirmed Martin Nieto, age 39, was charged with theft of a firearm and manufacturing and delivery of a controlled substance between 4 and 200 grams, according to a spokesperson with the Tom Green County Constable's Office. As of 1:15 p.m. Wednesday, Nieto was detained in the Tom Green County Detention Center, according to online jail records. San Angelo spars on abortion ban. Gunter says voters should decide. Thomas says council. By John Tufts, published September 21st. Update. This story has been updated with more information about a proposed ordinance to outlaw abortion. Residents sparred Tuesday during a city council meeting on whether abortion should be outlawed in San Angelo, and if so, who should make that decision, the people or their elected representatives. A draft ordinance submitted to city council last month would outlaw abortion within city limits, declare abortion to be murder, and protect municipalities from abortion providers setting up shop within the city's jurisdiction, according to documents submitted to the city clerk's office. There is a groundswell here that want to see this happen in San Angelo, said Ryan Buck, senior pastor of Emmanuel Baptist Church, 90 East 14th Street, to a crowd of anti-abortion activists Monday. It's very important for us that we get the city council to do this in their regular business on their agenda, he said. Not everyone agrees with Buck. Speaking before city council Tuesday, San Angelo resident Anna Martine voiced her opposition to the ordinance. You have heard from some citizens that all the people of San Angelo want this ban. This is untrue, Martine said. This so-called sanctuary city ban is ironically named ordinance at best. It eliminates safe haven and merciful assistance for those with unwanted, unhealthy, unsustainable, and forced pregnancies. Martine said the ordinance allows for no exceptions in cases of rape, incest, forced insemination, or extremely early stage pregnancies. In fact, it outlaws Plan B, a pharmaceutical that, by all accounts, should be prescribed as a doctor sees fit, Martine said. Advocates for the measure, however, said the ordinance does not outlaw prescriptions like Plan B. Abortion does not include birth control devices or oral contraceptives, according to the draft ordinance, which states an act is not an abortion if the act is done with the intent to save the life or preserve the health of an unborn child, remove a dead unborn child whose death was caused by accidental miscarriage, or remove an ectopic pregnancy. The term abortionist does not apply to any pharmacist or pharmaceutical worker selling birth control devices or oral contraceptives, documents state. While there are no currently any abortion clinics in San Angelo, as of Tuesday, September 21st, the draft ordinance would allow family members of a person who has an abortion to sue the provider and anyone who assists someone getting an abortion, such as driving them to a clinic. San Angelo mayor says citizens should decide ordinance. During a September 9th meeting, city council members expressed a willingness to put the ordinance on the ballot and allow voters in Tom Green County to decide if abortion should be criminalized or not. There are certainly citizens with a strong point of view that want San Angelo to be a sanctuary city, said San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter. I want to make sure all the citizens of San Angelo have an opportunity to vote on that issue. Some anti-abortion advocates, however, don't want the measure to be in the hands of local voters. Around 36 people gathered Monday, September 20th at City Hall Plaza, 72 West College Avenue, where they pushed for elected officials to make San Angelo a sanctuary for the unborn by passing an ordinance to criminalize abortion. Mark Lee Dixon, director of Right to Life of East Texas, who attended the rally, said it was the responsibility of elected officials to pass the ordinance outlawing abortion, not their constituents. Dixon appeared to take a direct shot at the mayor by quoting her in a previous article from the Standard Times, in which Gunter said she believed strongly that citizens have a right to vote on whether abortion should be outlawed. Seven people should not be making that decision for this city, Gunter said September 9th. A population of 110,000 should make that decision. Dixon didn't see it that way. Neither did Buck. The fact that San Angelo has a population of 110,000 should not make a difference in how this issue is voted on, Dixon said Monday. They're trying to circumvent their responsibilities, Buck said. We don't have a referendum or a vote with every decision the city council makes. They're trying to get the monkey off their back with this one issue. Martine believes anti-abortion advocates are trying to beat the clock on a possible decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, who legal experts think might weigh in on Senate Bill 8, a recently enacted law that forced almost all abortions in Texas to come to an abrupt stop. They don't want to wait until a vote occurs because there might be a change from state or likely the federal government, Martine said in a message to the Standard Times. We need the city council to consider not just the majority population, but what is best for all the citizens of San Angelo, Martine said. Thomas says the citizens elected us to make decisions. After listening to public comments Tuesday, District 3 Council member Harry Thomas appeared to agree with sanctuary city advocates. I think that the citizens of San Angelo have elected us to make decisions that will allow us to go forward on a lot of issues, Thomas said. Quite honestly, I think the ordinance could ultimately help some of these young ladies make the correct decision. Whether or not the majority city council will agree with that is something else, he said. Thomas said City Attorney Teresa James would brief city officials during a closed executive session in the near future about the pros and cons of the ordinance. San Angelo resident John Mark Hogg, who served on the San Angelo City Council himself as both a single district member and as mayor pro tem, believes it's possible an election might happen no matter what gets decided. Even if the council were to pass such an ordinance without an election, the opponents can petition the council to put revoking the ordinance on the ballot, so there will likely be an election no matter what, Hogg said in a message to the Standard Times. As to the divisiveness of the issue, as a former council member, I can only point out that bringing forth the ordinance has already created division in the community. There are just as many people who oppose such a measure as support it, Hogg said. Previous elections in Texas, however, appear to favor anti-abortion groups. Out of the 38 cities that passed similar ordinances, only one, Lubbock, put the measure to a vote. The ordinance later passed by more than 62% in favor of outlawing abortion, according to the Texas Tribune. Registered voters in Tom Green County have weighed in about abortion in the past. During the March 2018 Republican primary, a question posed on the ballot read, I believe abortion should be abolished in Texas. Vote yes or no. Out of the 6,948 registered Republicans voters who cast ballots, an overwhelming majority, 5,017 people in Tom Green County, 72%, wanted abortion abolished. Carl Wayne replaces a legend in the Brownwood radio booth by Mike Lee, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published September 23rd. Following a legend is never easy, whether it's the head coach, the quarterback, or in the situation at Brownwood this year, the Hall of Fame radio voice. Carl Wayne has felt the anxiety this season as he replaced Dallas Houston, the radio voice of Brownwood Lions football, for the previous 58 seasons. To put Houston's tenure in perspective, he has called Brownwood games on the radio for parts of 7 decades and 2+ generations. Longtime Brownwood area folks who began listening to Houston at 9 or 10 years old are now almost 70. They feel like they grew up with Houston and have known him for virtually their entire lives. But the 78-year-old Houston announced in April his retirement from radio because of health reasons. Wayne, the radio analyst alongside Houston for the past 13 years, was the natural choice to follow the legend. Dallas's name is all over the press box and around the stadium, Wayne said, before last week's Burn It at Brownwood game, his fourth as the new radio play-by-play voice of the Lions on KOXE 101.3 FM. You're always going to feel anxiety in a situation like this. You want to do good. The door entering the home radio booth in the press box at Gordon Wood Stadium reads, Radio, the Dallas Houston Room. When the Lions leave their locker room, they enter the field via the Dallas Houston Walk of Champions. For the first 2 home games this season, Houston has sat in a lawn chair with his wife Linda under shade trees between the locker rooms and the field. He usually has a radio up to his ear. Knowing that Dallas is out there listening now, I obviously feel a little nervous and anxious, Wayne said. I want to please him, and I want to make everybody happy. With every game we do, we develop our routine and get more comfortable, Wayne said, referring to his new analyst, Scott McDaniel. Prior to his first game in his new role this season, Wayne received multiple texts and in-person messages from friends and colleagues. They said, just be yourself. Do your own thing, Wayne said. That was good advice because nobody can be Dallas Houston, that's for sure. He is a legend. Houston, who understands his place in Brownwood sports history, but also has kept a humble nature about the place, already has given Wayne a thumbs up. I worked with Carl for 13 years, and I had absolutely no doubt that he could handle it well, Houston said. He's already doing a good job, and like anybody else, he'll improve with every game. The 60-year-old Wayne is no radio sports novice. In addition to being Houston's analyst for the previous 13 years, Wayne filled in on the play-by-play a half dozen times when Houston couldn't make a game. Wayne has also broadcast Brownwood girls sports basketball, volleyball, and softball for several years. Growing up in rural West Texas in Hamlin, Wayne learned at an early age what local radio meant to high school sports. He did play-by-play on high school football games for 20 years on radio station KVRP in Haskell before relocating to Brownwood. It wasn't like he was an unknown quantity, Houston said of Wayne. People know what kind of job he could do. Wayne credits Houston for teaching him a lot about broadcasting games over the last 13 years. When I did games before coming to Brownwood, I was kind of on my own. They'd just say, go do this game. Go get 'em, Wayne said. I wanted to get excited during the games. And Dallas said, it's okay to be excited, but you need to control your excitability. Don't get so excited that the listeners can't tell what happened. Then, of course, there's the great work ethic. Dallas showed up 2 hours before the games, and he's so prepared. He has the rosters, lineups, stats, and he's visited with both head coaches. He was as prepared as you can be for a game. Traveling to Brownwood road games for 13 years, Wayne has also heard a lot of the behind-the-scenes stories from Houston's storied career, most of them funny. I drove a lot of the time, and I'd be laughing so hard at some of the stories Dallas told that I'd have to pull over, Wayne said. He told me about one night at Burke Burnett when he got locked in the bathroom after a game. It was several minutes before they figured out he was missing and where he might be. Then there was the 1972 night before the first game at Syntex Stadium, now Gordon Wood Stadium, where the Lions still play their home games, when a bulldozer had an accident. The dozer was moving dirt just beyond the field, and it hit part of an underground tunnel that went into the field, Wayne said. They're hosting Abilene Cooper the next night, so they had to spend the entire night and the next day until about 3 hours before the game filling in the hole and patching up the field. Dallas said every time a player ran or got tackled in that part of the field, dirt flew up. Houston is still part of the broadcast. He records a short segment each week aired during the pregame show, and Wayne still uses Houston's voiceover for the introductions of each game on Friday nights. Brownwood Lions Football 2021 is on the air. I'd rather I be there to do the games, Houston said, but since I can't, I'm glad Carl is there to do it. Five Reasons to Consider Becoming a San Angelo Symphony Subscriber by Courtney Mahaffey, San Angelo Symphony Executive Director. Published September 21st. Following one of the most unusual and challenging seasons for all of us, Maestro Guzman and the San Angelo Symphony Orchestra have prepared a concert season of unique and exciting performances that will connect with audiences in bold new ways. Season subscription packages are a great way to get the most out of a concert season, offering cost savings, early access to seating, and exclusive benefits. Here are five reasons to consider becoming a San Angelo Symphony subscriber. Support live music and your community. Each San Angelo Symphony performance promises an evening of the very best in classical music, Broadway, popular, or jazz, and features the most amazing guest artists in our area. Your annual subscription not only allows us to continue our efforts in keeping the San Angelo art scene vibrant, but also contributes critical funding to provide musical experiences outside of the concert hall to thousands of children in the greater Concho Valley area. Save money. Becoming a San Angelo Symphony season subscriber means you lock in a built-in discount by purchasing a multi-concert season package compared to purchasing the same number of single tickets. Enjoy the best seats in the Murphy. The Symphony's tiered patron membership levels allows subscribers exclusive early selection of reserved seats. Subscriptions with best available seating are also allowed early access to prime seating before they go on sale to the public. Keep your seat each season. When you subscribe to one of the tiered patron memberships, you may sit in the same seat for an entire concert season and can maintain the same seat the next season with your renewal. If you subscribe to a package with best available seating, you can also upgrade it to reserved seating and may maintain the same seat the next season with your renewal as well. Enjoy a night out. From a celebration of women in the arts to a night revisiting our West Texas roots, the San Angelo Symphony offers a great evening out for every type of listener. As a subscriber, you can enjoy a concert season that includes a mix of familiar and new music that will leave you feeling renewed and energized. Questions about choosing the best 2021-2022 San Angelo Symphony subscription for you? Call our symphony office at 325-658-5877, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, or visit our website at www.sanangelosymphony.org. Grammy-winning country music artist Dwight Yoakam coming to San Angelo by Colin Murphy, published September 21st. Grammy-winning recording artist and multi-platinum country music legend Dwight Yoakam will make an appearance at the Murphy Performance Hall on Saturday, October 23rd, according to information released by the San Angelo Performing Arts Center. Yoakam is known for his unique style of country music and his energetic live performances. He first gained popularity in the mid-1980s and has since recorded more than 20 albums with more than 30 singles showing up on the Billboard Hot Country Songs charts. Yoakam has sold more than 30 million records worldwide, including 5 Billboard number 1 albums, 12 gold albums, and 9 platinum albums. His 1993 album, This Time, went triple platinum and had 3 top 10 hits, Ain't That Lonely Yet, 1,000 Miles from Nowhere, and Fast as You. Tickets go on sale Friday, September 24th. The box office can be reached at 325-284-3825 or in person at 82 Gillis Street. Tickets will also be available online at sanangelopac.org. A legacy built in flowers. Lilyfest continues after death of founder Ken Landon. By Colin Murphy. Published September 18, 2021. The first Lilyfest after the recent passing of co-founder Ken Landon and longtime volunteer Tim Davis was held at the International Water Lily Collection on Saturday. One of the organizers of the annual event said he hoped people would come and celebrate the lives of those who ensured the collection would last for years to come. Larry Jolly and this year's Lilyfest would serve as a way to remember the contributions Landon and Davis made to the local community. "This is the first year without Ken," Jolly said. "Today is really meant to be a memorial for Ken and Tim. We're not going to stop doing this. We are going to continue to keep the water lilies alive and well. It's really important to us to memorialize them for all the work that they did. We really hope people come and see all the work that Ken put into this absolutely amazing collection." One of the longtime volunteers at the collection, taking on the mantle after Landon's death, said it was important to keep the collection as a vibrant attraction in San Angelo. Chase Twombly said one experience in particular illustrated to him the lasting impact Landon's water lily collection has on the people who visit the site. "My wife and I have been doing this with Ken for just over 20 years, Twombly said. "I came down here one day and was working after Ken had passed, and a lady came down here and told me her mom had recently passed, and they used to come down to the water lily collection for years, and it was their thing they did to spend time together. So when her mom passed, the first place she came to was the gardens. This means a lot to San Angelo. Ken did that. Ken brought something to San Angelo that it needs. We want to keep this going because it continues Ken's legacy. That's what means the most to me. Ken saw what this city needed and provided what the city needed. We want to keep Ken's legacy alive. We want to thank the city of San Angelo and everyone who brings this together. It takes some great people to do this." Former San Angelo daycare teacher indicted after video shows child swinging in air. By Elena Edgen. Published September 17th. A former San Angelo daycare teacher could spend 10 years in jail after a student was seen swinging by their arm and assaulted during school hours, according to documents released Friday. The indictment charged Justice Marie Thomas, 26, with injury to a child younger than 14 years old with intentional bodily injury. This is a third-degree felony punishable by up to 10 years in jail and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Video shows child swinging by their arm, placed in dark closet. On March 30th, 2021, police watched surveillance video from Thomas's classroom at Trinity Lutheran Early Childhood Center, 3516 Lutheran Way. They noticed Thomas yelling at a child early in the day, while about 13 children took a test, records state. Thomas told the student law enforcement would arrest them and take them to jail. The child throws a pencil case to the ground. Then Thomas moves around her desk and forcefully pushes them to the ground, according to an arrest affidavit. Thomas forcefully picked the student up, shoved the pencil case into their torso, and walked to the classroom door with them. In the hallway, she grabbed them by the arm, forcefully jerking the child up, and then forcefully pulling the child back towards the main area of the classroom, record state. Investigators noted that the child could be seen swinging in the air, according to court documents. She commanded the student to go into the unlit classroom closet and close the door. After nearly 40 seconds, she opened the door, knelt down, and yelled at the child, record state. The student told investigators Thomas hit them, though the video did not show it. At one point, it sounds as though Thomas hits the child. However, it is not seen what occurs because the door to the closet is blocking the view, the record stated. It should be noted that during the entire incident, it is obvious the child is scared, is crying, screaming for parents, and pleading with Thomas, record stated. Woman attributes medical issue to assault in police interview. During a police interview, Thomas stated she didn't remember assaulting the student and believed she had some type of medical issue that caused her memory loss and aggressive behavior towards the child, record state. Investigators reviewed her medical records and did not see any conditions that would change her culpable mental state. Thomas was arrested April 13th on suspicion of intentionally and knowingly causing bodily injury to a child 14 years of age or younger and released from the Tom Green County Jail the next day on a $5,000 bond, according to online jail records. Note, the San Angelo Standard-Times uses the singular they-them when reporting child-related crimes to protect the child's identity. Abilene teen facing possible death sentence after fatal San Angelo shooting, by Elena Edgen, published September 17th. An Abilene teen has been indicted in the May shooting death of Jacob Hernandez in San Angelo and could face a death sentence, according to court documents released Friday. A Tom Green County indictment charged Francisco Josiah Morales, 17, with capital murder by other felony. The indictment listed Morales lived at an Abilene address and intentionally shot Hernandez to death while attempting to commit burglary of a habitation, according to the indictment. A capital murder charge is punishable by 5 to 99 years with a maximum penalty of death. Morales remained in Taylor County Jail in lieu of a $500,000 bond with additional unrelated charges in other counties. A court date has not been scheduled as of 10:15 a.m. Friday, according to online jail records. What led to the arrest of an Abilene teen? A backpack and a pendant. About 3:24 a.m., May 26, 2021, police arrived at an apartment in the 2400 block of Lily Street to a reported shooting. An officer found a gun on the apartment steps and damage to the front door frame and lock, according to an arrest affidavit. Officers found Jacob Hernandez, 26, lying on his back on a bed with a fatal gunshot wound to the chest. A video showed a dark-colored sedan enter the parking lot and two people wearing garments and face coverings to hide their identities enter the apartment, record state. One of the people had an Adidas backpack, which was left at the apartment. A pendant in the backpack had a photo of a woman, which gave police a lead. A relative of the woman said she died, and her grandchildren received these pendants on May 8th, according to court documents. Later, investigators met with a Bront woman who said Morales shot out the window of her 2011 Hyundai Elantra sedan and took it without her consent on May 23rd. He was arrested in Concho County with an Adidas backpack and wearing clothes similar to those in the apartment video, record state. Another woman told officers she picked the teen up from jail on May 23rd and they went to Abilene. The teen left after their return. A search of the teen's Abilene residence revealed clothes matching those from the video. Investigators also discovered a cell phone the teen used was in the area of the May shooting. Morales was arrested in Abilene on June 17th on suspicion of murder. Christmas at Fort Concho returns to San Angelo with some changes. Here's What to Know, by Elena Edgen, published September 17th. After canceling for the first time in the event's history, San Angelo's Christmas at Old Fort Concho is set to return this year with some changes. Christmas at Old Fort Concho is on for December 3rd through the 5th, 2021, according to Bob Luthart, site manager for the historic site. If the governor does not issue any special restrictions or forbids public gatherings, and if the city still seems to be supportive of our efforts and doesn't issue anything, then we're going full speed ahead, Bluthart said. The event, which usually brings between 13,000 and 15,000 people to the fort, takes about 6 months of planning, which officials have started. It also generates $50,000 to $60,000 in fundraising. There will be something for everyone. Food, shopping, entertainment, and history, Bluthart said. We're going to make every accommodation we can to ensure health and safety. Event passes will go on sale sometime in early November, as will tickets for the Lions Club Pancake Breakfast. People can still volunteer, sponsor, or be a merchant at the event by contacting Carol Cummings at 325-657-4441 or by going to fortconcho.com. How will Christmas at Old Fort Concho be different in 2021? While the pandemic is continuing, Bluthart explained that the event will have some changes to help ease concerns. It was kind of upsetting to cancel last year, but history shows that was the right decision, Bluthart said. None of us really know with certainty what the levels will be later in the year, but I do think as vaccinations increase and we get smarter about dealing with this, we'll be able to go ahead, and we have to start now. The three-day-long event will not have children events, such as workshops and art show. The cookie and gingerbread house decorating will happen, but in the quartermaster building, which has more room than the usual location in the hospital. It will also honor Sandy Whitley, who created the decorating event 20 years ago. Whitley passed away in September 2020. Though the pancake breakfast with Santa will happen, there will be limited seating. Breakfasts will be served in to-go containers, and officials are planning a drive-through. Santa's house, with Mr. and Mrs. Claus, is expected to happen, and officials are trying to figure out how that will work while maintaining COVID precautions. One thing to keep in mind is half of this event is outdoors, Bluthart said. There's an automatic fail-safe in there in that you can keep your distance. Yes, the event does have hundreds, thousands of people, but it only gets overwhelmingly crowded at peak points. The peak time would likely be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, Bluthart said, speaking from past experience. We don't get the volume on Sunday we get on Saturday, so there's plenty of time for folks that come out, he said. We will do everything in our power to make sure that we don't have any unnatural backups, and we will probably have a few buildings that will maybe have fewer merchants in them. Additionally, masks are not required, but are welcome. Tom Green County Detention Center under partial lockdown after officer assaulted, by Elena Edgen, published September 16th. A cell block at the Tom Green County Detention Center is under lockdown after an officer was assaulted by an inmate who is charged in a 2019 murder, according to a county sheriff's office news release. At 10:32 a.m. Thursday, September 16th, a county corrections officer escorted medical personnel as they distributed medications. During this time, an inmate assaulted the officer, according to the release. The officer was taken to the hospital, treated for minor injuries, and released. An inmate was identified and moved into a single-person cell. The cell block remains under lockdown as of 3:15 p.m., according to the release. Investigators identified the inmate as Brian Garcia. Garcia has been indicted in the 2019 death of Christian Rose and burglary of a habitation, according to court records. The SECS Septiembre event kicks off National Hispanic Heritage Month, by Colin Murphy, published September 20th. In honor of National Hispanic Heritage Month, a SECS de Septiembre event was held on the steps of City Hall in San Angelo to recognize the cultural impact and lasting influence of the Hispanic and Latino population on the local community. The event was hosted by the San Angelo Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center, which also requested a proclamation for Hispanic Heritage Month from the City of San Angelo. Susana Valenzuela, Vice President of the San Angelo Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center, said one of the group's long-term goals is to create a new facility dedicated to celebrating and recognizing the contributions and accomplishments of Hispanic people in the Concho Valley. This year, the national theme for Hispanic Heritage Month is Esperanza, a celebration of Hispanic heritage and hope, Valenzuela said. In San Angelo, we have so much to be hopeful about as we gain traction to create the first Hispanic Heritage Museum in San Angelo. It is great to be able to highlight Hispanic contributions during Hispanic Heritage Month, but the goal of the San Angelo Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center is to create a physical location where people can visit any day of the year and learn more about our community. In keeping with this year's theme of Esperanza, meaning hope, San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter said she hoped young people would find inspiration in the accomplishments of those who came before them. The theme of this year's observance is Esperanza, a celebration of Hispanic heritage and hope, Gunter said. It is with progress and strong hope for the future that younger generations will embrace their culture and follow the achievements of past Hispanic leaders. Gunter continued by providing a brief history of the origin of National Hispanic Heritage Month and the significance of the event on the local community. National Hispanic Heritage Month originated in 1968 as a celebration of National Hispanic Heritage Week with a proclamation by President Lyndon B. Johnson, Gunter said. In 1988, Congress amended the original public law, creating National Hispanic Heritage Month. It recognizes the Hispanic people's most valuable assets, shared culture, history, knowledge, and sense of community. Hispanic citizens of San Angelo and the Concho Valley have made significant contributions by way of business leadership, civil service, culture, education, military, and ranching in the region. Diez y Cies de Septiembre celebrates the liberation of Mexico from Spain after an uprising which began in 1810. The event is considered one of the most important holidays in Mexico and is celebrated in many other countries around the world. And now here's the column by Allison Watkins. How to Manage Insects in Your Landscape and Garden. Published September 18th. There has been an assortment of insects making themselves at home in landscapes and gardens lately, beneficials as well as damaging pests. Insects are just as much a part of gardening as plants, so it's important to learn to recognize the good, the harmless, and the harmful. Learn the most effective, least toxic ways to control pests, and take steps to encourage and promote valuable pollinators, predators, and parasitoids. Aphids have really been making their presence known this fall. They have been feeding on sap from tree leaves and dropping sticky honeydew. When sidewalks, cars, and mailboxes are covered in a sticky film, aphids in trees are the likely culprit. Black pecan aphids have been prolific in pecan trees, causing more significant leaf drop than usual. There is often some leaf and nut drop in late summer just from the heat stress. The sticky mess from aphids is fairly easy to prevent and manage. One good option is to apply a imidacloprid as a drench on the ground. It's a systemic product that is long-lasting and does not need to be applied frequently. Usually once per year is appropriate. Just don't apply around flowering plants that bees and butterflies will visit, as it can be damaging to them. But if applied to trees that are wind-pollinated, like oaks and pecans, it will not harm beneficials. Grasshoppers have caused a lot of damage this year and seem to be sticking around longer than usual, though they are finally fading in numbers. Grasshoppers are very difficult to prevent and control because they become so widespread and numerous. During particularly bad infestations, try using geotextile fabrics as a physical barrier over high-value plants and vegetable plots. These materials allow enough light and air circulation, but create a barrier for insects. There have been many calls about galls on tree leaves and twigs. Galls are round, unusual-looking growths that can be caused by various triggers, but many are caused by tiny wasps. They lay eggs on the leaf or twig and stimulate the tree to grow tissue around them, forming the gall. They are almost always harmless to the tree and require no treatment. Caterpillars have been abundant this year, such as unusually early populations of webworms and armyworms. Pest caterpillars can be controlled with a spinosad or BT. Both are natural biological pesticides. Check redbud trees for scale, small insects that don't move once they attach themselves to the branch. They look like bumps or scabs. If scale is observed, wait until the leaves fall and temperatures drop this winter and apply a dormant oil. Don't miss the first ever Master Gardener's Fall Vegetable Plant Sale on Saturday, September 25th. For info, visit https://txmg.org/Concho Valley or call the extension office at 325-659-6522. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.